You're listening to Of Consuming Interest on Washington Post Radio. 1077 FM, 1500 AM, and reaching the world on WashingtonPostRadio.com.
Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
You want to set up a trust for your pampered pet, but you don't know what's involved. Or perhaps you'd like to set up a long-term care plan. Well, we're going to talk about this and much more. My guest is Evan Farr. He's an attorney in private practice in Virginia. He's a certified elder law attorney and an estate planner. Evan, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you for having me, Shirley.
Now, I've never heard, I know that people leave their pets, that, and there's a concern for it. I mean, pets can be members of your family. But is this a new thing that people are able to actually set up a trust, a real trust for their pet?
Well, Shirley, I agree with you that most people, in fact, I think almost everybody considers their pet to be a member of the family. And for many years, I and other estate planning attorneys have been preparing informal trusts for pets where somebody in their will or in their living trust will name a pet caretaker and give that person a certain amount of money to use for the care and the feeding and the medical needs of the pet. In years past, these arrangements had to be informal, and there was no way for them to be enforced because pets were recognized under the laws of most states as property and not equivalent to people who could be protected as beneficiaries of trusts. But in recent years, due in large part to the Uniform Trust Code, which has been enacted in 38 different states, including Virginia and D.C., there is now allowed a formal type of trust called a pet trust. And these trusts are specifically allowed under the Uniform Trust Code. And the way they work is there are four parties involved. There's you as the person who creates the trust. There is a trustee that you name to manage the money that you leave for the trust. There is a pet caretaker that you name that is the person who actually will have physical custody of the pet and take care of the pet's needs. And then there is typically a fourth party called a trust protector, which is an individual or maybe an entity such as an animal rights organization that has the ability to enforce the trust and can actually go to court and force the caretaker to do certain things for the pet, force the trustee to use money as set out in the trust.
I know that many of my friends, their pets are, they're really part of their family, and this can be an important consideration for people who perhaps are alone and have an animal that they want to make sure it's cared for when they don't perhaps have children that would take care of it or that they want to take care of it. So this can be something that can be very useful for people. But what happens now? Let's suppose that you set up a trust for your pet and then the pet dies. What happens if there's money left over in the trust? Where does that go?
Well, in your pet trust, it's very important that you name a residuary beneficiary. That may be a person to receive any money that may be left over, or it may be an organization that receives the money. Many people will name an animal sanctuary or a no-kill shelter as the beneficiary of last resort if the pet dies.
What if the pet outlives the money?
Well, then that's another problem, and hopefully you would have named an individual who obviously cares about pets, and that's why you named this person to care for your pet. Hopefully that person will continue to care for the pet using their own funds. Alternatively, you can name an animal sanctuary or no-kill shelter as the caretaker of last resort so that if the trust runs out of money to pay the caretaker, or if the caretaker dies, for that matter,
then
that
it'll have plans for it.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you. So this is something that people who are concerned about protecting their pets when they're gone can utilize and set it up so that they have comfort in knowing that their pet's taken care of.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Okay, let's talk about some of the, I don't think any of us like to think about nursing home care. I mean, that's not a subject that we want to put on top of our list. Unfortunately, however, it is a subject that oftentimes comes up and slaps us in the face when we least prepared for it. And whether it's we're looking at it as children of elderly parents who perhaps we'd like to see them do some planning, or we're elderly ourselves and want to do some planning. So let's talk about what is out there and what's available. And you've written a book. This is called The Virginia Nursing Home Survival Guide, but I'm sure there are other resources for individuals around the metropolitan area to talk about nursing homes and so on. Tell me about your book. What was the motivation for you doing the book?
Well, the motivation originally for the book was to educate clients. I originally wrote this for the benefit of my clients in my elder law practice, decided then to turn it into a book, because even though the information is available on my website, a lot of people, particularly the older people who may need this information, still don't have access to the internet. And that's really why I created the book. And even though it's the Virginia Nursing Home Survival Guide, it's really applicable to people in all states, because most of it is based on federal law, which is enforced very similarly in this entire area of Virginia, Maryland, and
D.C. What is your website, Evan?
The website is virginiaelderlaw.com.
virginiaelderlaw.com. Okay. And people can get information there. And you're right. It is really a book that pertains to nursing home care in general. For our audience, and since we have a mixed age range, when should someone, a younger person, start thinking about whether or not they should plan for long-term care? Because, I mean, this is something that is going to involve a financial commitment. It's going to involve sitting down and recognizing our mortality and thinking about what might happen to us. Where do you see this starting to happen in a person's life?
Well, frankly, I think that people of all ages should be concerned with the possibility of needing long-term care. In my practice, you know, I do a lot of elder law, but also a lot of estate planning for people of all ages, including, you know, young married couples on up through elderly folks.
You know what? I'm going to have to interrupt you for a minute. I'm getting so fascinated, I forgot to take a break. So we're going to take a brief pause. Don't go away, because you'll hear the rest of the answer when we come back.
You're listening to Of Consuming Interest on Washington Post Radio. 1077 FM, 1500 AM, and reaching the world on WashingtonPostRadio.com. Now back for more in-depth news and analysis.
Welcome back. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Evan Farr. He's an attorney in private practice in Virginia. He's a certified elder law attorney, and he's an estate planner. And before I had to interrupt him for the break, you were talking about your practice, which involves a very diverse group of people, and when they start planning for long-term care.
Exactly. And I was saying that I think people of all ages need to deal with long-term care, and everybody should have a long-term care plan, just like everyone should have an estate plan. Now, a long-term care plan is different things for different people. For some people, it may involve long-term care insurance. If that is an affordable avenue, that can be a wonderful part of a long-term care plan. For other people, long-term care plan involves having essential estate planning documents, such as a properly drafted general power of attorney, a properly drafted advance medical directive, and a new type of power of attorney that's called a special power of attorney for long-term care. I do all of these documents as an integral part of every estate plan for people of all ages, because these documents will then allow somebody to do the necessary type of planning that elder law attorneys do if and when the time comes. Because long-term care is not just an issue for elderly people. Of course, primarily in nursing homes we have elderly people, but people can have major debilitating accidents at any age.
Or illnesses. There are illnesses, yes.
People can have strokes at, you know, in their 40s and 50s. Alzheimer's, there's a subcategory called early onset, and more and more people in their 50s are developing Alzheimer's and winding up in nursing homes. So I don't think it's an issue that...
It's not really age-specific, is it? It really is an issue that should cut across all ages who have to think about it and plan for it. All right, now, there's something that you mention in your book that talks about if someone ends up in a nursing home. And what is this? This is the Advanced Planning Guide. Would you describe that for us and tell us what it is?
What we're talking about is an advanced care plan. First, let me explain what a care plan is in the context of a nursing home. When individuals enter a nursing home, federal law actually requires that a care plan be developed initially within the first month, and then every 3 months thereafter, the care plan has to be updated and evaluated. The care plan is an assessment of the individual's medical and physical condition and their personal and psychosocial needs to enable the nursing home to maintain the highest possible well-being of the person in the nursing home. This is a requirement under the Federal Nursing Home Reform Act.
Is that fairly recent?
No, the Federal Nursing Home Reform Act has been around for quite some time, and all nursing homes...
They have to abide by it.
Have to abide
okay.
by this.
Okay, so they have this plan, but now there is something that you were telling me before we went on the air, that there's a software program that will allow the patient, the elder person themselves, or their children working with the elderly person, to set up a plan for what they really would need, the kind of care. I found this fascinating. I had no idea this kind of thing was available.
Exactly. The problem with most traditional care plans is they happen in the nursing home at the time when the nursing home resident is often out of it, so to speak, and they cannot participate in their own care plan. And hence, several years ago, a couple of nurses came up with this idea for creating something called an advanced care plan. And they took several years to develop a piece of proprietary software that allows people, through use of a computer program, to sit down and answer interview questions. It's about a 3 to 4 hour process of answering dozens of questions. And the questions deal with the person's habits and preferences, their medical condition, their physical condition, their likes and dislikes. And at the end of this process, what happens is the answers to your questions are uploaded to a database that then creates a written document called an advanced care plan. And the idea is that this advanced care plan is then given to the nursing home if and when the person enters a nursing home. And this advanced care plan forms the basis of the official nursing home care plan.
And you say that now by law, these nursing homes are required to take this into consideration when they're treating a patient? I mean, you describe something in your book here. You talk about one patient who, without the plan, would be left sitting in the hall in her chair for hours. But with the plan, her concerns and likes and dislikes are taken into consideration, even down to so much as what she had for breakfast.
Exactly. The types
But do they really follow it? I mean, you know, we hear horror stories about nursing homes, as I'm sure you hear them, where, you know, the people are left uncared. And, you know, I'm not trying to knock nursing homes. And I think that in recent years, there have been a lot of laws and a lot of improvements in them. Okay. But I'm sure that this still happens. So how can you be sure it's actually being utilized?
There's no guarantee that the information or the requests you incorporate into your advanced care plan are going to be followed by a particular nursing home. But the idea is to put this information, to put your desires and preferences and habits into writing while you're still competent and able to express your wishes, so that when the official care plan is formulated, and under federal law, the nursing home is required to take into consideration the nursing home resident's input and desires, the chances are much greater that the nursing home will follow the...
They at least have answers. They have a guideline.
Exactly.
They have a directory, so to speak, of what this person is like when they were able to express their likes.
Exactly.
And they may be able to express their likes, but if they're not able to. So this is really something that everybody should think about doing.
Absolutely.
How do you get the software?
Well, right now the software is licensed through attorneys such as myself. I believe I'm the only attorney in Virginia that's licensed this at the time. It's also licensed through some geriatric care managers.
So this was something that you wouldn't do with yourself at home. This is something you would do with an attorney?
As far as I know, it's not something that's available.
Okay, we're going to have to take a brief break here. We'll get the answers when we come back.
You're listening to Of Consuming Interest on Washington Post Radio. 1077 FM, 1500 AM, and reaching the world on WashingtonPostRadio.com. Now back for more in-depth news and analysis.
Welcome back. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Evan Farr. He's an attorney in private practice in Virginia. He's a certified elder law attorney and an estate planner. Before we took the break, we were talking about something called an advanced care plan, which is licensed through attorneys. It's a software program which allows the individual to sit down and to go through a rather lengthy process of answering questions about their personal preferences. And Evan was explaining to us how this can be accessed by consumers.
Well, as far as I know, at the moment, it's licensed both through attorneys, as you mentioned, and through geriatric care managers, which are typically nurses or social workers that work with elderly people and their families. But to give you an idea of the types of things that the advanced care plan speaks about, it will start out, for instance, in the morning when somebody wakes up, what types of foods they like for breakfast. What do they drink? Do they prefer coffee or tea in the morning? And if they drink coffee, how many cups and how do they like it?
Oh, and wow. That's really detailed.
It does go into detail. And then it goes into dietary likes and dislikes. For instance, somebody might state in their advanced care plan that if they're in a nursing home, they want to be able to eat bacon and eggs if it's offered, despite the fact that they may have been for the last 30 years on strict orders from their doctor for low salt and low cholesterol. But they've decided in advance that, you know, if they're in a nursing home, they want to enjoy what few years are left with as high a quality of life as possible. It goes into activities that may be offered during the day, whether the person prefers to partake in crafts, or maybe the person likes watching soap operas all day, or maybe there are certain types of movies the person likes. Maybe they like to sit outside on sunny days. Maybe they like to play cards or participate in a quilting group.
It's just really a whole lot of your personal preferences.
Exactly. Exactly. Even on into sleeping habits, how many pillows somebody likes to sleep with at night. These are things that can be very important to people.
Sure, in terms of your comfort.
And a lot, the problem with nursing homes is a lot of people in there have cognitive deficiencies that are manifested in such a way that the person knows what they want. They still know their likes and dislikes, but they're unable to communicate those likes and dislikes to the nursing home staff.
And so this is a way of doing it. And this is something we have to do when we have our faculties. Now, is this a relatively new, this is relatively new software?
It is. It's only a few years old.
Okay. And are you seeing your clients responding to it? Do they seem to like it?
Oh, yes, yes. I now offer this to all of my estate planning and elder law clients, and I find that people are very pleased with it. They really like the end result.
What are the percentages of people who are likely to end up in a nursing home? Do you know, of the elderly population or any population, the population in general, I guess?
Well, I don't remember the exact statistics off the top of my head, but I believe over 65, the odds are 50% for a single person that they will go into a nursing home. For a married couple, the odds go up to 70%.
That one of them.
For over 65. Over 70, the odds, if I recall correctly, are 85% that someone will go into a nursing
home.
Wow. And once you hit age 85, I do recall that the odds go up to 97% that somebody will need long-term care.
I have a 93-year-old friend out there who is defying all the odds. But, you know, a lot of it's luck, I think. The website is virginiaelderlaw.com. Can people find out about the advanced care plan there?
Absolutely. I have a lot of information about it and a link to the advanced care planning website, which talks about their program that they've created.
All right. Well, that is great information. Any other last words here for people? Estate planning, they shouldn't put it off, right?
I think everybody needs to do it at every age, and I think it's important, as I mentioned earlier, that everybody doing an estate plan also develop a long-term care plan. You need to make your wishes
known.
And
that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go out and buy long-term care insurance. That's not what we're talking about.
No.
We're talking about if that possibility occurs in your life, what do you plan for it?
Exactly. For instance, types of things that should be part of a long-term care plan should be discussing with your family. What happens if you have a stroke? Where do you want to live? Would you prefer to have hired help come into your home and take care of you so that you can remain in your home as long as possible? Or would you prefer to be moved to an assisted living facility so that you have the built-in socialization mm-hmm. that comes with being around other people?
Because you might not be able to communicate those wishes if you've been, as you said, cognitively, you're okay, but you can't communicate.
Exactly.
Well, Evan, that's it. Thank you so much. It's been a very enlightening visit. Nice to see you. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Evan Farr, an attorney in private practice in Virginia. And I'm Shirley Rooker with WTOP's Call for Action.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.